So how do we, as followers of Jesus, come together now in the light of the election of Donald Trump?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here. I've got a special broadcast today. I want to share some things on my heart with you that I think will be really, really helpful. I won't be taking any calls during the broadcast, but call a friend, encourage them to tune in. This is a matter of real importance, obviously, a matter that we have to discuss as God's people. And yesterday, a Sunday, I was preaching in a church gathering in Northern California, the Bay Area, Hayward, California, maybe about a half hour out of San Francisco. And for Sunday, the two main churches using one building came together. One church that would be mainly older white Americans, the other church that would be mainly Hispanic and somewhat younger Americans. There were others as well. There were a number of Asian young people who were students or grads from Berkeley University. So it was a diverse group. But that picture, it struck me, okay, this is their first service for both of these congregations after the Trump election. And it just so happens, because I was coming in, that they held a joint service together. And I thought, well, that's a picture. And I said it publicly, that's a picture of what's going to have to happen. We're going to have to come together as one. America needs us to right now. Even those who voted for Donald Trump and who believe that he'll do a great job as president, the church has to do its job. Unless we maximize this moment and do our job, it's not going to help the nation all that much to have Donald Trump as president, even if he does a great job. If we fail to do our job as the church, conversely, those who are deeply concerned about the Donald Trump presidency and feel he could do great harm to the nation, all the more does it behoove us to do the work of the body. But how do we do it? There are very deep differences. And certainly, if Hillary Clinton was president, there would be very deep differences. Would there be rioting in the streets the same way? Maybe. Maybe so. I don't think so as much, because it's probable that with many of these riots, they're provoked by activists. They're provoked by activist organizations. And they're not only the frustrations of the people. And the left just tends to do that more. But there would certainly be massive discontent. And I believe there would be plenty of people who would not recognize Hillary Clinton as their president. For years now, this is the rhetoric. I remember it. Well, he's not my president. I didn't vote for him. So I would always go out of my way to say, in the midst of my profound differences with President Obama, he's still my president. Listen, every election, every single election, someone is elected that tens of millions of people did not vote for, but that person becomes our president, however distasteful it is. And it's obviously not time for an armed revolution against the government like we threw off the yoke of Great Britain over us. Right now, we have every opportunity to vote and to bring about change through the vote, through a democratic process, and that's what happened this last time around. By the way, and what I want to do is give you helpful ideas, things to think about, things to chew on that would help us come together as one, as followers of Jesus, all right? But for those who say, well, he didn't even win the majority vote, and, you know, it still ends up as a close count, really that's immaterial, because the Electoral College focus exists for a purpose. The Founding Fathers set things up a certain way for a purpose. There's a great little video from Prager University that we put on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page that explains it. But Trump and Hillary campaigned to win states, all right? If they were simply campaigning for the popular vote, then there'd be a lot more time just spent in states like New York or California, where, say, New York Secretary of State Clinton could absolutely assume she's going to win New York, and Trump's going to assume he can't win New York. So anyway, they campaigned to win the Electoral College, and that's what happened. So Donald Trump is your president, like it or not, like Hillary Clinton would have been my president, like it or not. How do we come together with all of the baggage, the concerns, the issues? How do we do it? Give
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your friendly voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. This is our first time now coming together on the broadcast to step back, to reflect, and to say, how do we come together as one in Jesus, as followers of Jesus, as those who are called to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world? How do we come together to make a difference in America in a positive way under a Trump presidency? There are some who are absolutely elated that Donald Trump is the president. I'm talking about born-again believers that feel that God's going to use him in a great way for our nation. There are others who voted for him but have grave concerns and reservations about what kind of president he could be, but felt it was right to vote for him and against Hillary Clinton. Others say, look, whoever won, it's going to be a problem. Neither candidate was a good candidate. We're in trouble either way. Others absolutely mortified, horrified that Donald Trump is the president and can't believe that other Christians voted for Donald Trump, just like it'd be hard for me to believe other Christians voted for Hillary Clinton. So we're in a deeply divided state, more so than normal. How do we follow admonitions like this? Ephesians 4, verse 1, beginning verse 1. I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. On Saturday, I was on Moody Radio's Up for Debate show with Julie Royce, and the first half hour, we dealt with the question, say Brendan and Jen Hatmaker, they now openly and proudly support same-sex, quote, marriage. Do you remain in fellowship with Christians like that? Did Lifeway do the right thing by saying we won't sell Jen Hatmaker's books anymore? Did the Belong Tour do the right thing by saying, well, Jen Hatmaker can continue to speak for us? So I was the guest on, you say, isn't it up for debate? Yeah, but they couldn't get anyone else to come on even before I was announced. So I was the only one on there just discussing the issues and representing the position I believe is right. And then the second half hour, there was a local Hispanic pastor from Chicago of Mexican descent. And he was given the great balance of the time to talk in that second half hour. I did get to speak, but it was briefly. And he very gently and graciously gave the perspective of a Mexican-American, talked about what some of the young people there are dealing with, what some of the families are dealing with, the trauma of a Trump presidency, and are they going to be deported? And, you know, their status is kind of one of these in-between things, and will they be deported? What about their family members, and what's going to happen? And, you know, people crying and upset, and others wondering, how could this be? How could other Christians vote for Donald Trump? At the same time, he said, look, then he hears about someone, you know, in not far away from his area, a white guy in a black neighborhood, and next thing the guy's getting assaulted and beat up. Well, did you vote for Trump? Did you vote for Trump? So his heart was grieved. You could hear the pain in his voice and his love for the Lord. And he reminded us that the gospel always goes to the poor, and that the poor often seem the most receptive of the gospel. And yet here it seems under a Trump presidency that the marginalized, the hurting would be the ones that would be even more marginalized and hurt even more. And he said, look, you know, the Donald Trump quote about Mexicans, and he may have quoted it in an exaggerated form, but still, even if Donald Trump's point was to say that Mexico is sending the worst ones they have here, not that all Mexicans are bad or rapists or this or that, but that Mexico is sending their worst ones across the border to us. Yeah, I assume some are good, Trump said, but they're sending their worst rapists and they're doing this and that. Even if his whole point was to say there are many fine Mexicans, but most of the immigrants coming our way, they're the bad ones. Well, how do you feel if you're an immigrant? If you're a hardworking, law-abiding, God-fearing, family-loving immigrant? So I understand where they're coming from, and yet he read some quotes, and he wanted to share these quotes as really expressing his heart, but I take issue with these quotes. So again, I'm going to give, as best as I can, practical guidelines, practical advice, practical suggestions for what we need to do to unite together as one in Jesus behind a controversial president. Again, a man that I voted for, although I had opposed through the primaries and had grave reservations about, ended up voting for, and feel that God indeed could be raising him up for America's good and for the good of the church. There is a gay website headline says this: "Who's happy Trump won? The Klan, Nazis, and anti-immigrant activists worldwide." The website explains, "Racists, homophobes, Islamophobes, haters, and anti-Semites are genuinely ecstatic over his election." Well, is that true worldwide? And is the KKK celebrating here in America? Yeah. But does that mean that Donald Trump is a racist or a hater because they're excited? Well, you say, well, yeah, look at, you know, judge a man by his friends. Well, he's not their friend, though. Yeah, but why are they all excited? Well, could it be because he represents a strong departure from a weak government in America or a weak America? Or could it be because he's racist? I mean, these are the questions on the table. Greg Popovich, highly respected NBA coach, San Antonio Spurs coach, and also famous for often being very concise and terse in his interviews, he said this, and I'm just reading a portion of it. "I'm still sick to my stomach, and not basically because the Republicans won or anything, but the disgusting tenor tone and all the comments that have been xenophobic, homophobic, racist, misogynistic. And I live in that country where half the people ignored all that to elect someone. That's the scariest part of the whole thing to me." All right, so here's the question. White evangelicals voted for Donald Trump at the rate of 81%. Were they ignoring the xenophobic, homophobic, racist, misogynistic rhetoric? Or do they reject that it's xenophobic, homophobic, racist, and misogynistic? Headline in USA Today proclaimed, "White evangelicals just elected a thrice-married blasphemer." What that means for the religious right. A New York Times op-ed was titled, "The Rage of White Christian America." You say, yeah, but that's the world speaking. That's the world speaking. And that's not the church speaking. Those are not the quotes of believers in Jesus necessarily. That's the world speaking. Well, African-American pastor, evangelical Jonathan Brooks said this in Christianity Today, and this is one of the quotes that Pastor Paco Amador read during my discussion on Moody Radio. Pastor Brooks said this: "Donald Trump is our president, and I'm speechless. Deep down inside, despite what we have seen over the last few years, I thought we had made progress. I just knew that a blatant racist and accused misogynist could not be the leader of our country. But I was wrong. America proved that we care more about preserving a way of life that privileges a few than protecting the lives of our most marginalized." Well, I know a lot of people that voted for Donald Trump, some enthusiastically, some with great reserve, but I don't know a single one that for a split second thought that they were trying to preserve a way of life that privileges a few rather than protect the lives of our most marginalized. In fact, they'd say we had the most marginalized in view, namely babies in the womb. The greatest innocent victims in our society. That's a major reason people voted against Hillary Clinton. And I might turn to Pastor Brooks and say, "Pastor Brooks, did you vote for Hillary Clinton? If so, I'm in shock. I'm speechless. You follow me?" Now, by the way, I'm not arguing either way. I'm laying out the tension, the problem. Here's another quote from Christianity Today, where they interviewed a bunch of evangelical leaders that Pastor Amador also read. This is Dominique Gilliard, another African-American evangelical leader who's also worked in racial reconciliation. Quote, "While Hillary was undoubtedly a flawed candidate, white evangelicals' unprecedented support of Trump, despite his racism, misogyny, and ethnocentrism, is revelatory and deplorable. Did this bear witness to whiteness rather than the gospel? What did this communicate to the world about God?" I've got one more quote. I'll read in the next segment. Did this have to do with whiteness? Ah, that was the last thing in my mind. If you gave me a list of 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 things that I was voting for, that whiteness or white privilege or white supremacy was not on that list, but I was voting for a lot of things that I believe deeply ethically, and that probably these African-American Christian leaders would also agree with. Yet, how is it that so many of us ended up voting for a candidate who certainly has made misogynistic comments over the years, quite a few, almost known for that, who certainly did say things to inflame racial or ethnic tensions, and who certainly did say things that did stir up a dangerous nationalism, not a healthy nationalism, but a dangerous nationalism. So how is it that we came to grips to vote for him? How can he be good for America? What do we say to African Americans and Hispanics and other minorities that couldn't vote for Trump? What do we say to them? I'm going to give you some suggestions now, as I've laid out the problem, I hope, clearly enough, when we come back right here on the Line of Fire. Don't go anywhere.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, when I was speaking on Saturday in Hayward, California, near San Francisco, a gentleman came up to me teary-eyed and said, "You have been the voice of God to me." And obviously it's humbling to hear someone say that you've meant that much to them. And I thanked him for his gracious words. He said, "Many others feel the same." Friends, I hope I can be the voice of God to you today by reminding us of our scriptural duties to walk in unity, but also reminding us of our calling to be people who are quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. We're talking about coming together after the elections, and during the interaction I had with this Mexican-born, Chicago-based pastor, Paco Amador, he quoted the words of Sandra Maria von Opstahl, and this is part of the prayer she had prayed. "How long, Lord, must we live in a country that continues in the idolatry of white supremacy and self-preservation?" Now, I can understand. It's hard for me. It's very hard for me. But I can understand how people, Hispanics and others, other minorities, Muslims, they look at this massive white evangelical vote for Donald Trump. I mean, he got more votes than Mitt Romney, and he got more votes than John McCain, and he got a higher percentage of evangelical votes than anyone wants since Ronald Reagan? Huh? Donald Trump? About the most unlikely candidate to be supported by evangelicals? It's hard for me to understand how my fellow believers could look at those of us who voted for him and think this has to do with white supremacy or something like that, or the idolatry of white supremacy. Because that is, again, the furthest thing from my mind. I welcome cultural diversity. I want it to be able to vote for our first African-American president, but couldn't, for conscience sake. I love hearing in recent years that the church worldwide is not predominantly white. It is growing in a multi-ethnic way around the world. I love worshiping with believers in multi-ethnic settings. I long to see multi-ethnic people raised up in so many different areas of life making a difference. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. And I'm sure many others who voted with me feel the same way. It's hard for me to see how someone could think that. On the other hand, it's easy to see. It's hard for me to see because I know it's not true from my perspective. On the flip side, yeah. Why did we all gather on this candidate? You're telling me it wasn't some right-wing white nationalism that got stirred up? Now, I said before the break there's a healthy nationalism and an unhealthy nationalism. The healthy nationalism is we want America to be strong. Of course, we have to put our nation first if we're going to be strong and be a blessing to the rest of the world and be a help to the rest of the world. And first, all of us, we have to get our own house in order, right? Paul writes, if you won't take care of your own family, you're worse than a non-believer. You've got a widowed family member and you won't care for that person. You know, say a mom, a widow, a widower, your dad, and you don't care for them. You want the church to care for them. You said you're worse than unbelievers. So, yeah, we care for our own first, and then we care for others, right? We understand that. But there's an unhealthy nationalism, which is an America first nationalism that doesn't care about the good of the other nations, that just says we alone have to prosper and do well and let the rest of the world fend for itself. And if it dies, it dies. No, we've been greatly privileged and blessed by God, and we want to help others in the world. We want to help the needy. We want to help stand for justice and things like that. But here's what we're going to have to do. And I'm going to talk about this for a full hour. So if you miss any part of the broadcast, just go to thelineoffire.org and just click on listen, and you'll be able to catch the entire 1 hour later on. But here's where it has to start. I look at some of these leaders and say, did you vote for Hillary Clinton? You voted for the shedding of innocent blood. You voted for an attack on our religious liberties. You voted for radical gay activism. You voted for the weakening of our country in many ways. How could you do that as a follower of Jesus? Now, we're both incredulous, right? We're both, how could you vote? How could you vote for Hillary? How could I vote for Trump? That's where we start and say, and I know this is basic, and I've said this a million times over, not quite, but many times over in many different settings. It begins by doing our best to get one another's perspective. And what it means is this: show me why you feel the way you do. Help me to see things through your eyes. I asked last week to my African-American callers, what has Donald Trump said or done to make you feel threatened? Again, I haven't heard comments from him towards Black Americans that I would say are racist. Someone says, well, he talks about the blacks. I don't think he means anything by it. It might sound disparaging, but I don't think he means anything by it. But many called or tweeted me or posted on Facebook. Look, when he's talking about we're going to have law and order in our country, we're going to be a country of law and order, they immediately think cops are going to have carte blanche in the inner city. It's going to go back to worse than it used to be when there was no accountability. That's what they hear. Others had other concerns. And I had people call law-abiding, God-fearing Black American citizens who expressed their concern. That helped me to understand more clearly. I understood in part. That helped me to understand more clearly. Nancy and I were talking, and she said, just picture being an immigrant, Mexican here, maybe you're second generation, maybe you're first generation. How are you going to feel? You're Muslim, or you're a young person. And I said, yeah, but the media fans things into flames so much, they increase the rhetoric, they fan things into hysteria. She said, of course they do, but there's been enough that Donald Trump said himself, and she listened to far more speeches of his and former interviews than I did, that would raise concern. Maybe some young person thinking, he's really saying, so let North Korea, let Japan, let them all get nuclear bombs? Did he actually say that? Did he actually mean that? What's he going to do? Now, we need to hear that. Look, I don't go for this white supremacy thing, but someone needs to tell me why they feel that way so that I can at least see it through their eyes. Friends, we've got to start here. And conversely, I have to be able to explain to them why I believe God is at work in the life of Donald Trump and that God raised him up and how he could be a good president for all of America, for immigrants as well as Muslims. And others, he could be a good president for all of America and for the good of the church. And rather than argue, first understand it. First understand it. And then go back and forth in your discussion. But we've got to do it. We've got to start there. All right. Can I ask you an honest question? Have we been a blessing to you this year? Almost 200 articles I've written this year. Have they been a blessing to you? Almost 200 videos I've put out this year. And what? How many hours of 500 radio hours? If that's been a blessing to you, we do need your help as we come to the end of the year. It will be such a blessing to us. Would you go to the website right now, thelineoffire.org, click on donate, give a generous gift as we stand together making a difference. It is time for a gospel-based moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You are listening to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I'm not giving out the phone number because I'm not taking calls today. I want to talk with you about how we come together as one, as followers of Jesus, after the election of Donald Trump. For some, you say it's easy. God raised him up, and this is a great moment for the church to stand as one. For others to say, how do we do it? He's such a divisive president. He's going to be such a dangerous president. And yet 81% of white evangelicals voted for him. How do we stand together? Aside from the fact that we listen to each other, that we hear each other out, that someone says to me, here's why I couldn't vote for Donald Trump and I have a problem with you voting for Donald Trump, and I listen until I understand their perspective, even if I differ, then I say, right, can I explain to you that I was especially voting against Hillary Clinton and therefore for the unborn, for a conservative Supreme Court, for religious liberty? I was voting against what I felt was the negative direction our country had taken under President Obama, a direction that would have been continued under Hillary Clinton. And for me, this had nothing to do with white privilege or white supremacy or white anything. This had to do with the good of the nation. And again, as I've said over and over, I believe if there was a female conservative running against a radical liberal Democratic male, so if we had, for example, Carly Fiorina running against Bernie Sanders, that evangelicals would have rallied around her, white evangelicals, males would have rallied around her. And if the candidate said had been Dr. Ben Carson, and he was the candidate against Bernie Sanders, that the one thing that would have been of zero concern to the vast, vast, vast majority of white evangelicals was the skin color. In fact, many would have said, great, now we get to vote for an African-American candidate. Many just would have said, well, is he qualified? And say, well, certainly we'd rather have him in than Bernie Sanders. So this was not an issue of race. This was not an issue of sex. Nonetheless, because of the appearances of this, because of the large numbers of those that voted in certain directions, it can feel like that. But even when we put aside our communing with each other, our listening to each other, our talking back and forth one to another, even when we put all of that aside, you explain your position to me, I explain my position to you. Here's where I voted, even though I have reservations. Someone else saying, here's where I voted enthusiastically. Someone else saying, here's where I couldn't vote. Someone else saying, here's where I voted for Hillary Clinton. Either way, we put all that aside because the job of the church remains the same, right? We have to respect the fact that people prayed, people looked at the issues, people came to the conclusions they did, and they voted. We have to respect that. I have a massively hard time with other believers who voted for Barack Obama. And we didn't have Donald Trump. It was John McCain and Mitt Romney. We didn't have Donald Trump as divisive as he could be to so many. So I have a real problem with that. And even though the alternative candidate was Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton, is one of the two electable candidates, I have a hard time with believers who voted for Hillary Clinton. I do. And I fully understand believers have a hard time with me voting for Donald Trump. But did we do our best? Did you really wrestle with it? Did I really wrestle with it? Did we really pray? Did we really think we were doing the right thing? Did we try to honor the Lord? Did we agonize over this decision maybe more than the vast majority of elections that we've been in our lifetime? I certainly did. I certainly was more uneasy about it and more up and down about it, and then finally felt I'm voting for Donald Trump, and I believe if he's elected, it'll be by the hand of God. There's no other explanation. And now we've got our work cut out for us. But either way, did you do your best? I did. I believe you did. All right, we didn't do it in a cavalier way. He's our president. Let's take that as the will of God, for better or worse, and now let's do what we're called to do. Now let's give ourselves to the work that only the church can do. We'll be right back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You are listening to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, but I'm not taking calls today. I want to share my heart fully on the issue of how we come together as the church in the aftermath of the Trump presidency. And as always, evangelicals will not vote as a bloc where it's 100% of the people voting in a certain direction. But Donald Trump got the largest support from white evangelicals of any Republican candidate since Ronald Reagan. What's interesting is that he got slightly more black and Hispanic support than did Mitt Romney. You think, how's that? Well, because it wasn't just an issue of race and ethnicity. There are other reasons why people are voting. In fact, the mass number of reasons that people voted for Trump had nothing to do with race and ethnicity. But if you missed any part of the broadcast, this is something I'm taking a full hour on. So you're listening now, you're listening to the last half hour. Maybe some of you only caught the first half hour, didn't know I was going on with this. You catch this all by going to thelineoffire.org just later this afternoon and click on listen. You can listen to today's show. Also, I have a lot of this in an article. There's a lot more depth I'm getting into, obviously, in 1 hour on the air, but I have a lot of this in an article, and you can read that article on our website, thelineoffire.org, and the article is entitled, Have White Evangelicals Joined with the KKK and Nazis? And I say this towards the end of the article. In short, evangelicals who voted for Trump need to understand why their anti-Trump colleagues are so devastated and shocked by the outcome of the election. There are legitimate reasons for their concerns. Conversely, anti-Trump evangelicals need to understand that their colleagues who voted for Trump are not white supremacists who blindly embraced a debased candidate, and we had legitimate, prayerfully calculated reasons for our vote. And in the end, since Donald Trump is the incoming president of the United States, it's imperative that all of us come together and work for the common good, but that can only happen if we do our best to see one another's perspective. So again, to say it once more, we sit down with each other, especially those who are crazily on the opposite side, and that we're going to just debate forever on social media and get and heat it with each other. No, we need to say, all right, now that the election's over, please share your perspective, but I don't want to argue. I want you to help me see through your eyes, and I want to help you see through my eyes, and then this way at least we can be civil towards each other and respectful. All right, so over the weekend, I was in Hayward, California, which is about a half hour outside of San Francisco in the Bay Area. And by the way, we had a good turnout from students and grads from Berkeley University, mainly Asian Americans. And they were praying in tears with me for revival at Berkeley, for God to move and pour out a spirit there. It's obviously a liberal stronghold in America. And they were in the meetings. We were praying for the Bay Area. But the services were multi-ethnic. And for the main meetings, the Saturday two meetings and Sunday two meetings, the two main churches came together, an older white Assembly of God church that owns the building, maybe seats 600 people, and a younger Hispanic church that also uses the building. And then elsewhere in the building, I think there's a Filipino service and a Korean service, but those are native language services also taking place other parts of the building. They weren't part of our services. So Sunday morning, I was going to preach, and the two churches had come together for a joint Sunday morning service instead of meeting two separate times in the day like they normally do. And a friend of mine is a pastor, a white pastor in the New York area, and of Italian descent, and he was talking to me about a meeting he was at, hanging out with other pastors, and it was a multi-ethnic meeting. Hispanic pastors, black pastors, white pastors were there, and they were talking about what matters most to them when they get together. They get together for a service, they get together for a meeting, what matters most? And he had shared this story with me, and I said to myself, okay, Sunday morning, it's the first Sunday after the elections, And interestingly enough, and even prophetically enough, you could say, these two different groups, an older white group, a younger Hispanic group, they're coming together as one for worship, to pray for revival, to hear the word. And then you had Asian Americans and others that were there as well for the same purpose. All right, so I thought, okay, this is what has to happen. The church has to come together. Should I tell the story that my friend told to these pastors? Is it risky to tell it? What if the folks here and the greater majority would have been Hispanic in the service? What if they don't find it funny? And I thought, well, I think it's culturally cute, so I'm going to share it. So my pastor friend from New York told me that when these pastors were talking together, white pastors, Hispanic pastors, black pastors, that the white pastors said for them, their bottom line, the biggest thing, the most important thing for them was, what's the bottom line? What's the bottom line? Let's just get to it. What's the bottom line? We got a schedule. What's the bottom line? That's what I want to know. The black pastor said their greatest interest, their greatest value was honor. They come together in a meeting. They want to show honor and deference. And if you are white and you've been to a black church, you might be struck by that. We just want to honor this one. They call the pastor's wife, maybe the first lady. I remember speaking for a friend in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, black pastor, great church, almost entirely African-American. And I love ministering for them. And I remember before I got up to speak, and when I got up to speak, I intentionally went out of my way to say I was honored to be there and I wanted to honor the leadership. I believe either four or five different times before I got up, at one point or another, they said, we are honored to have Dr. Michael Brown with us. What an honor to have him with us. We honor Dr. Michael Brown in our midst. It's just a value. You might think, you know, you're white. They're like, man, it's taking forever. And then conversely, you might be a black Christian. You show up at a white church and they just get on with the meeting. We didn't honor anybody. It's like, what? So it's just different cultural backgrounds. No. Well, what about the Hispanic pastors? They said their ethic, let's have a party. Of course, serious about the Lord, passionate about God. That wasn't the issue, but that was the cultural thing. Well, I shared it this morning, and it got a great laugh from the people. All that to say that we can look at things through different perspectives. And I can be saying, why are they doing that? You know, I'm in India sometimes. I'm thinking they're doing this all wrong. No, they're doing it the Indian way. And an Indian can be an American thing. You're doing this all wrong. No, we're doing it the American way. And look at it like this. When it comes to food, you know, in the old days when I used to eat differently, man, you know, give me pizza and pasta or burgers or fries or something like that. And someone said, oh, we have like a specialty. It's you know, these delicious clams or you know, we cook this, you know, something else that I didn't eat, you know, oh, this is really good. It's like, I don't want that. Don't give that to me. No, thank you. And I'll give them something of ours I think is delicious. Like, this is bland. It tastes like rubber. So think of it. We have massively different tastes in foods. And it's not a matter of right or wrong. There's bad food and good food. But you can eat the favorite cuisine of some other culture and you almost vomit on it. The same with musical tastes, right? There's good music and bad music, but we can listen to the best music of another culture and say, turn it off, it hurts my ears. The same way with cultural styles of dress and things like that. Now, you say, well, how does that apply to the church? Because with the church, we're dealing with right and wrong. With the church, we're dealing with ethical issues. Yeah. But you may have a burden for something I don't. And I may have a burden for something you don't. And I might say, this is the biggest priority. And you might say, no, this is the biggest priority. And we both may be right in terms of our own life, our own calling, our own situation. So in that respect, I will honor you for voting for Hillary Clinton if you did it with prayer and the fear of the Lord, despite my profound difference. But I need you to honor me for voting for Donald Trump, which I did in the fear of the Lord, despite your profound difference, so that we don't look at each other in demeaning ways. I don't look at that person that voted for Hillary Clinton and say, you're a compromiser, man. You don't care about the unborn. You don't care about the future of America. You don't care about religious liberties. You don't care what happens to the Supreme Court, what happens to your kids and grandkids. You're a compromiser. Well, if that person loves the Lord and is a godly person and wrestled with this, well, that's between them and God. I've given warnings not to vote for Hillary Clinton. But if you did, out of the fear of the Lord, out of love for God, hey, I respect you as my brother, my sister. And if you say to me, man, how could you vote for Donald Trump? Misogynist? Did that, you want that guy? What has he said about it? Do you want that guy as president? What's he said about women? And look at the racial tensions and the ethnic tensions he stirred up in our country. And he'll make a mockery of the presidency. But, well, hey, I trust that you prayed and wrestled with it and had reasons for your vote. So I'm going to treat you with respect. Now, let's get on with being the church. Let's get on with the work of the church. Let's get on with the Great Commission. Let's get on with the things that God has called us to do.
Send it, Lord. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we've got one last segment today on the special broadcast on the Line of Fire. I haven't taken any calls. Just talking about coming together as one in Jesus after this volatile election season. You can read my latest article where I deal with this. Have white evangelicals join with the KKK and Nazis. I think you'll see that I present the viewpoint of those struggling with Donald Trump very clearly, and then seek to present the viewpoint of those who voted for Donald Trump clearly as well. And the bottom line is, as far as coming together, friends, we really have no choice. We really have no choice. Regardless of our views about President-elect Trump, and are you willing to say he's my president? I said Barack Obama was my president, right? This is how it works. Every year, millions of Americans vote, and only one candidate gets in, and millions of Americans voted against that candidate, voted for another candidate. And again, don't get hung up of the Electoral College issue. Our founding fathers did that for a reason, for the rights of the states, and that no state would be completely ignored and would have a voice. If it's just a popular vote, say all the votes, New York, California, that could, or Texas, that could carry it, and all the other states have no vote. But remember, the candidates campaigned to win the electoral vote. That's what they campaigned for. If they were campaigning for popular vote, they would have campaigned differently. But just as I prayed that Barack Obama would be the greatest president we ever had, I'm praying that Donald Trump would be the greatest president we ever had. I was disappointed with Barack Obama. I might be disappointed with Donald Trump. I hope not. But either way, we must come together and we must do the work of the church. And that means living godly lives. That means preaching the gospel, helping the poor and the needy, standing for justice. We have to do that regardless of who is president. So I wrote an article right before the election, if Hillary wins, if Trump wins. And I said, okay, six things if Hillary wins, the sixth being, in short, if Hillary is elected, it is wake-up time for the church. And then I gave my 6 points for Donald Trump, the sixth also being, if Donald Trump is elected, it is still wake-up time for the church. But here's what I said is our assignment if Trump is elected. One, we must give credit to those Christians who saw God's hand on Trump through the election season, despite his fleshly flaws, recognizing that there must be a unique divine purpose in his presidency. There's simply no other way to understand how a man like him could defeat so many fine candidates in the primaries and then bring down the Clinton machine in the general election. And then secondly, a Trump presidency, we have to recognize, could do as much harm as good. Since his wrecking ball methods and his questionable character are so volatile and unpredictable that he could bring us down as easily as he could bring us up. Could you imagine what would happen, for example, if Kanye West, who's jokingly, or maybe not jokingly, said he's going to run for president, Kanye West and Kim Kardashian were their president and first lady? Okay, maybe an exaggerated picture, but what would that mean for American culture and life? All right, and then third, we should therefore pray for divine restraint on Donald Trump as president, lest he do or say something rash as president. And we should pray that he will not only surround himself with godly and wise counsel, but that he'll also listen to his counselors, doing what's fair and just when it comes to immigration and security and healthcare and the economy. And four, we should also pray that his resolve to do what is right will not waver and that he'll not become a compromiser who wants to prove he can work with everyone. We must encourage Trump to stay true to the Republican platform and to nominate Supreme Court justices in the image of Scalia and to stand up for religious liberty. And five, as God's people, we must work against the deepening divisions in our country, seeking to build bridges and be peacemakers, not troublemakers, also addressing issues of injustice and oppression, be they from the right or from the left. And we must pray for revival in the church with the same urgency as if Hillary was president, since we would be making a terrible mistake to look for Trump as some kind of savior figure or to take our foot off the gas because of the Clintons. The Clintons, who for many conservatives are the epitome of evil and deception, were kept out of the White House. All right, so let's remember God never said to the president, you are the light of the world, you are the salt of the earth. He did say that to the church. And if there is to be a positive nationwide moral and cultural revolution in America, it must begin with us. So let me share some final thoughts with you. Again, if you missed any of this, 1 hour I've been speaking about this, just go to my website, thelineoffire.org, later today, Monday. The show will be up. And if you don't subscribe by podcast, if you miss any parts of the show and are interested in catching all of it, special guests we have, when you click on listen on The Line of Fire, you'll also see an option to sign up for the free podcast. But let's bottom line this. Best case scenario with President Trump, God raised him up to spare us from the further loss of our religious liberties, from the further war on the unborn, and from a radically liberal Supreme Court that would undo many of the foundations of what America stands for and is as a nation. That's best case scenario on what would happen under Donald Trump. Oh, also that our economy would be strengthened, our military would be strengthened, our security would be strengthened, and that there would be a fair and practical and good and just and compassionate immigration policy so that we'd secure our borders better to keep the bad people out, but we'd let the genuine immigrants, the needy ones, come in. That would be, best case scenario all around. But let's just say this is the case. It means we've been given time. It means that things would have gotten much worse for the church in America